amid the highly politicised debate over asylum seekers in Australia, the plight of those who've already arrived and been accepted as refugees is often overlooked. Many of those resettled in Australia are deeply traumatised, bringing emotional and physical scars from the countries they've fled. This week, advocates and trauma experts are gathering in Brisbane for the second Australia and New Zealand Refugee Trauma Recovery in Resettlement Conference. One of the keynote speakers will be Paris Aristotle. He's the CEO of Foundation House, which is a Victorian-based organisation that supports survivors of torture. In 2012, he was appointed to Prime Minister Julia Gillard's Special Refugee Advisory Panel and became an advocate for her so-called regional solution. He joins me this morning from Brisbane. Paris Aristotle, welcome back to Breakfast.
Thanks, Cathy.
Paris, this morning people are, of course, gathering in Christchurch. There's a remembrance service for the 50 people who were killed in the Christchurch mosque terrorist attacks a fortnight ago. What impact has this tragedy had on refugees here in Australia, particularly those from Muslim-majority countries?
Oh, well, Kenny, those, an event like that has had a widespread and deeply traumatising or re-traumatising impact on many people. I mean, one of the first principles for recovery for many refugees and numbers that have been tortured or traumatised are a very high proportion of our intake. But one of the first principles is to restore safety and a sense of security. And an event like the incident or the terrorist attack in Christchurch shatters that sense of safety and security for many people who've been through trauma as a consequence of violent acts being perpetrated against them once before. So there's no doubt, and I can tell you that from staff to clients that we have, and I was talking to someone else who had been working with someone for many, many years who was doing quite well in Australia, the effect of that incident has been to leave them feeling scared, frightened about going out in public, unsure about whether they'll be safe in the Australian community.
But certainly,
I should say,
Paris,
the response has had a big impact as well.
I was going to say, certainly we've heard Jacinda Ardern and her very strong leadership in this. She's been praised for that. And we saw both the Prime Minister and the opposition leader come out as well very strongly after that event. How much do the words and actions of leaders filter down to those who might be re-traumatised by an event like this?
The words of leaders in trying to unify the whole country behind a group are incredibly powerful. And I think Jacinda Ardern and the New Zealand government has really demonstrated to the world what it takes in order to, in how to respond to such a horrific event and begin a process of uniting the wider community around a particular group that would have been feeling directly targeted, unsafe as a result of that, and re-traumatised. And I think the way in which they have surrounded the community, they've supported the community in terms of the burial process, they've stood in solidarity with the community. I've even read articles where bikie gangs were offering to provide the security around mosques, as well as just ordinary everyday New Zealanders turning up in demonstrations of support and solidarity. That, as a counter to the horrendous impact of that terrorist attack, has been profoundly beneficial to everybody, including here in Australia, because it's communicating a message to people that we care, we respect you, you're a part of our community, and we're going to back you up and be there to ensure that you're safe in the future.
Paris Aristotle, you've been assisting refugees with their resettlement for decades now. How successful have Australia's programs been in terms of helping those who come here with trauma?
Australia's probably the leading country in the world in the way in which it assist survivors of torture and trauma for a long time now. Federal governments have funded a program called called the Program of Assistance to Survivors of Torture and Trauma. It's probably the best developed and best resourced government-funded program anywhere in the world. The network of agencies in Australia is amongst the amongst the most skilled and professional networks of organisations anywhere in the world. And so it's an area that really we can be very, very proud of, even though it's not talked a lot. Many countries look to Australia in terms of how we do this work. And
unfortunately, Paris, though, they also look to Australia about the way that we treat our refugees held in offshore facilities in Nauru and Manus Island. In terms of the most recent development, which of course was the Medivac bill and the reopening of Christmas Island Detention Centre, what do you make of that?
Well, I think the establishing legislation that would ensure that people who need to be transferred for medical reasons was largely in the hands of medical professionals is a very appropriate that that should be able to guarantee that there isn't any misjudgment about whether somebody needs to be transferred to Australia for medical care or not. I think that's an extremely good thing, and I think the way in which organisations and others have gone about that process and are now going about applying that process has been very positive and should be well supported. I think reopening Christmas Island is something that the government has obviously made a decision about. I'm unclear as to whether anybody has actually been transferred to Christmas Island. It, my view would be the first priority is whatever a person's health need is and wherever they need to be to receive that treatment is where they should be placed. I think the government has acknowledged that principle, even though they are saying if there are some cases of individuals where they believe there's a serious security or character risk, they may be transferred to Christmas Island. I'm not aware of that happening yet, but I do think the first principle has to be, in every circumstance, people need to be where they can receive the best treatment.
You came to the view in 2012, after considerable soul-searching, that offshore processing was the right response to the influx of boats at that time carrying asylum seekers. Do you regret this decision?
Well, to characterise it as offshore processing in terms of what we recommended is not quite right. We came to the view that in order to build a sustainable strategy for dealing with boats and preventing the loss of life at sea and for securing proper protections for people, that we needed to invest in building a regional set of arrangements where people could be safe, could be processed in a timely and fair way, and that durable outcomes could be provided to them as well. Now, what the legislation necessary to build that regional framework couldn't get past the Parliament because at the time the opposition and the Greens were not prepared to support aspects of the legislation that would have made that feasible. The other challenge that we faced at the time was we made a series of very clear recommendations about safeguards that needed to be in place, and they included things, for example, like no arbitrary detention. I don't regret what we were trying to achieve. I don't regret the fact that if the recommendations of the panel had been put in place, there would have, most people would have been off Nauru and Manus three to 4 years ago. There wouldn't have been anybody detained ever, and the resources that were spent on it would have been spent on caring for people and preparing them for where they would have been resettled. And we would have had a much larger humanitarian program and been 6 years into the development of a sustainable regional system.
A very different Australia that you're presenting there, Paris. Can I just go to, and I'm sorry to interrupt.
That is what the panel recommended, though, yeah. Cathy, and it is, in my view, a tragedy that we were unable to get all of those things put in place properly, because I think it would have been much better.
Paris, let's go to your presentation today. Time is against us this morning here, but you're talking about human rights and protection of asylum seekers in Australia. You plan to focus on the Global Compact on Refugees, which is a UN initiative. Australia is a signatory. It's a non-binding agreement. How do you think it can be applied in the Australian context, and why will this agreement work when others haven't?
Well, I'm not going to be as bold as to say this will work when others haven't. One of the things I will say, and it ties into the view that we need to strengthen regional arrangements, is that this is the first time where on refugees, every country in our region has signed on to a document in terms of the Global Compact. That gives us a basis for having a discussion about how to apply a set of arrangements that will guarantee people's safety, that will help stabilise populations, that could give people access to work rights, children access to schools, the kind of supports and assistance that everybody needs to feel safe and secure while we process claims and establish whether or not they have refugee claims, whether they can be resettled in other countries, whether they could be locally integrated. And so though the arrangements and the way in which the Global Compact is designed is that it should help countries, if they come together to work collaboratively, to operationalise the convention. That's not something that we've had every country in our region sign up to before. So what I'm hoping from this process is that the Global Compact helps us develop new thinking and carve new pathways for how to respond to global human displacement in ways that are humane, that are supportive, and that not only benefit refugees and asylum seekers, but are going to benefit the countries that are hosting them or resettling them as well.
Paris Aristotle, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Cathy.
Paris Aristotle is the CEO of Foundation House.